Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, my friends. I'm Eric Olson. It is time once again for America's Most Haunted Radio. Fantastical show this evening. We have Lowell Dean, who is the young, extremely successful writer-director of the indie horror comedy sensation Wolf Cop, which is just due to spread its seed all across Canada coming up on the 13th. They gave it a little test run in Western Canada. It did so well. It was also at Cannes, and did so well, received awards. People are screaming, jumping, madness. And all of this is leading to a general release all across Canada starting next week. Written and directed by Young Regina. I know it's Regina, unlike some places in the U.S. where it would clearly be Regina, my friends. But in Canada, it's Regina. Filmmaker Lowell Dean. Wolf Cop is a horror comedy that follows Lou Guru, get it, actor Leo Fafard, an alcoholic cop who tends to black out and wake up in unfamiliar surroundings. However, lately things have taken a strange turn. Scenes seem oddly familiar. Lou's senses are heightened, and when the full moon is out, he is a rage-fueled werewolf. He's a cop. He's a wolf. He has a conscience. He wants to do good. That's what the movie's about. Wolf Cop is one cop's quest to become a better man, one transformation at a time. Wow. Well, that is some exciting stuff. And my friends, as I often do, because I'm running behind, and today was the ultimate madness. We had baseball activities all day long. The season is winding down for my 10-year-old boy, and so he's got all kinds of activities going on. It is madness. He was in a camp, and I've been helping coach his team, and we had that. So this is one of my lightest Twitter days in about a year, probably since last summer. I think I tweeted more on Christmas. Nonetheless, it is very exciting to be here, and it is exciting to speak with Lowell Dean. Do we have Lowell on the line?
Hey, how you doing?
Fantastically well. I assume this is you, Lowell.
This is me, yes. Glad to be here.
Excellent. And where are you now?
I am in Regina, Saskatchewan.
I said it right. I knew it was Regina because I've been through there before.
Yeah, I mean, you'd think it would be Regina, but I guess
you would
not.
Think that.
I don't know what we're trying to say. Yeah.
Oh, man, there's so many odd pronunciations. You go to Illinois, southern Illinois, and there's a town that's extremely well-known throughout the world, but they pronounce it Cairo, not Cairo. They just want to be difficult. So maybe that's what's going on in good old Regina. Are you from Regina?
I'm from Saskatchewan. I'm from Saskatoon, which is another city in Saskatchewan, but I've spent the majority of my life in Regina. Yeah.
Coolness. Well, this is such an exciting project. First of all, congratulations. Great film. Funny, scary, creepy, bloody, touching. Man, you hit all the notes.
Yeah. We definitely wanted to leave no stone unturned within our budgetary constraints.
Well, it does not look like a cheap movie. I mean, it really doesn't. Whatever your actual budget was, you absolutely made the most of it. And really, that's what counts. You know, the bottom line is, what's the movie look like? What's it feel like? I don't have to tell you, there's lots of movies, even movies with big budgets that kind of have a cheap feel, but this one does not. So I would imagine, ultimately, that is attributable to you.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not just me, but we made it a mandate, our whole crew, to really push the envelope, and you know, people put a lot of sweat into this to make sure, even if people were expecting maybe a really low budget, silly looking movie, that it would deliver and look you know, five times the budget, hopefully.
It does, and I don't even know the budget, but I already know it looks five times the budget. All right, well, let's tell people this is such a cool story in terms of the grassroots element and the competition, I guess is what you'd call it, right? That the film won in order to get additional backing. So why don't you just kind of give us the short story in terms of how the movie came about and this whole new approach that you guys are taking to grassroots indie promotion. And wow, I mean, it's clearly led to tremendous, thus far anyway, success.
Yeah, it really seems to be working. About 2 years ago, I had the script, and we had really not many prospects. Myself and my producing partners, a company called Echolands Creative, we were really passionate about making this movie, and we didn't have any idea of how we were going to do it, basically. So we shot a concept trailer, and the trailer was kind of our way of putting the idea out there, right? So we brought in a bunch of our local crew, about 40 people volunteering, and just busted our butts to make a really good trailer that showed the tone of Wolf Cop. And from there, we didn't know what we were going to do. We just thought somehow we'll have this trailer and we're going to find some money somehow, whether it's, hitting up some people who recently won the lottery or what. And but while we were researching, we came across the Syndicu Accelerator. And, the more we looked into it, we're like, this seems right up our alley. And the budget was a guarantee of around $1 million, which is great for a movie like Wolf Cop, because we would have been lucky to probably raise a quarter of that independently. And on top of that, the real golden nugget was you would get a guaranteed theatrical release in Cineplex theaters in Canada. So that was all we needed to read, basically. We're like, okay, we will regret it if we don't try and make Wolf Cop through Syndicu.
And so you did. So tell us what happened then. It's a great tale. Continue on. Don't leave me hanging
all right.
Here.
I'll continue to regale.
Regale up a storm, you mad Midwestern Canadian, you.
Okay. So basically, we entered our trailer in the contest, and it was really intense. It was, punishing, all immersive for 3 months. And it's not just like you entered your trailer and that was it. 90 other teams from across Canada were also in it. And, you would also have to be rated on your trailer. You do weekly mission videos with challenges, like talking about why did you make this movie? Who would you cast in this movie? How would you do things beyond your film to promote the movie? And, it was an intense 3 months, and, you learn a lot. I compare the Syndicu process almost to making a movie, only, there's no money. You're just pushing hard, and you're going to burn out yourself and your friends by the end of it. But we went hard, and we were lucky enough that by the end, we were the last team standing, and we got to make our film. We were very lucky, and that was phase one of the adventure, I guess I'd say.
So you had to wait until you won to actually make the film itself. Is that right?
Oh yeah, the Syndicu process was basically, I would compare it almost like you were being vetted, right? Is there an audience for your product? Can you build an audience? Can you market your film? And do you have the skills to maybe make the movie based on some of the challenges? Do you have a script ready? Is it worthwhile? All those things. So no, by the end, you hopefully by the end of Syndicu have an audience, some marketing tools, and a script ready to go. And we have those things, and our kind of campaign is already, I would say, caught fire at that point. And we were getting a lot of really cool attention, not just, in Saskatchewan. Yeah, we had our moms and our dads behind us, and people were making Wolf Cop cookies. But also beyond our province, we were being picked up all over the world, actually. I was Google translating things to understand what people were saying about Wolf Cop, and it was pretty much mostly good.
Pretty much mostly good.
Yeah.
Well, I like the equivocation.
It's kind of critic proof, I find. I mean, which is another, to me, beautiful thing about Wolf Cop is you either like it and you get it, or to me, you might come across as a bit silly if you're going to spend a lot of time and energy ripping into something like Wolf Cop and calling it stupid. It's like, well, I'm not to say it's stupid. I don't think it is, but it's clearly meant to be taken in a certain tone and playfulness.
Well, sure, it's an homage to you know, a number of approaches. Obviously, it has a strong horror component, and the werewolf aspect goes all the way back to, you know, the original Wolfman. And, you know, so you see aspects of that. And then, I mean, there's all kinds of playful aspects that I picked up on, lots of little things here and there. And then it was, you know, kind of the angle is obviously finding something different to do with your monster. So, you know, we have zombievers. We have zombie beavers out there. And you came up with the concept of the wolf cop. How did you come up with the concept in the first place, back to the very beginning? What was the impetus behind that? As I understand it, you did do a previously a feature film, right? 13 Eerie with, one of my faves, Catherine Isabel, the pride of Canada.
Yeah, that was my first feature film as a director, and I like to say I was baptized in blood making that movie because I had never done a feature before. It was a fairly decent independent feature for budget. It was $3.5 million, and prior to that I had done, you know, documentaries and short films as a director, probably, if I'm lucky, at, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars. So it was a huge leap and huge learning experience. Yeah, I got a lot out of that film, and it was great because I feel like it really armed me for the warfare that is making an independent film, especially in the million-dollar budget range. You know, I don't think I would have survived Wolf Cop if not for 13 Eerie.
Well, that's a big, big step. I mean, people, you know, listeners may be used to hearing the budgets, you know, and the ballpark figures of major studio movies. But, you know, $1 million, and you're talking about 13 Eerie was even more. You know, $2-3 million. That's a huge budget for an indie movie. I mean, that shows all kinds of confidence in you and your ability to pull it off and to pull all those strings together and make it happen. Very few people, get to make a first film with a literally multi-million-dollar budget. That's really pretty amazing. You must have impressed the right people.
I must have. I don't know. I must have given them the right bribes. Who knows? But I mean, it's
and vibes.
It's funny you say that because even with you know, 3.5 or 1 million or whatever, it still feels like it's never enough. You know, not with these kinds of movies.
Well, it isn't enough at 100 million. You know how that goes.
I'd probably complain with 100 million too.
It, because, as I understand it, not that I'm a filmmaker, because I'm not, but I've been around it, and I've done production work, like, way back, and I've done, actually, you know, a fair amount of TV, so I just understand, you know, kind of the basics. But, I mean, as far as budgets go, where the real, real sink seem to be is, A, talent, obviously, so, you know, if you're having to pay multi-million just for the talent, maybe just for one guy, you know, or a woman, one star, there's a huge amount right there. And then special effects are so incredibly expensive.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and for Wolf Cop, we did put a hefty portion of our budget into the practical effects because we knew our star, you know, the star of Wolf Cop is Wolf Cop. You know, you want to be able to pull off that character with confidence. And you want to, you know, it's about milking those moments and letting him be a wolf cop and not just walking in and, you know, having a coffee. You know, you need to see Wolf Cop do what Wolf Cop does.
Exactly. So did you use no computer effects at all? Is it all practical?
We have a handful of digital effects shots. It's pretty minimal. I mean, I don't want to go into too much detail on what they are because it might, you know, spoil some of the plot, but it's a handful of effect shots and also sky replacements and things like we didn't get lucky enough to be shooting on an actual full moon on some days, so we would put a digital full moon in the sky. But honestly, about more than half of the full moons in the movie we actually got and shot while we were making the movie.
Well, it really does have an organic feel. It has a an old-fashioned feel, and I mean that in the best sense. I mean, you have that filmic feel as opposed to, you know, we've talked about this several times with various filmmakers, and they're really, I mean, to this day, even with all the astonishing advancements and the technical achievements, there really have only been, I mean, for me anyway, a handful of characters, you know, that have really pulled it off convincingly and organically, or felt organic, I should say, you know, to this day in film history. There's, you can still tell when it's not real,
yeah,
no matter how good it is. And
totally.
I love, you know, advancement. I love the Zemeckis stuff, you know, with the, what's the technique where it's the drawing over the, you know, the actual acting. And of course that's what Gollum did too, what they did with Gollum. You know,
yeah, Gollum was a great example of when it works, you know, with that motion capture.
Exactly. That is the one that really, really stands out, you know, and there just aren't too many others. And you're hearing a lot of complaining actually, even about The Hobbit, you know, the first two so far just don't have the same feel as The Lord of the Rings, and people are saying there's too much, you know, there's too many digital effects as opposed to the predominance of practical effects that were in Lord of the Rings. So it had a much more, you know, in that case, the unlimited budget is, and of course, probably in many cases, the unlimited budget is not to your advantage, you know. I mean, I know you
were half kidding
when you said, you know, that kind of no matter what the budget would be, you'd always want more. But, you know, I think there's truth to that. So anyway, I didn't want to diverge too far from things. But let's go back now to this actual process. I'd be really interested to hear a little more, as much as you care to talk about, you know, about the actual making of the film. Always fascinated to hear, you know, the approach and what is your kind of, you know, personal, what are your personal priorities in how you put it together. But I'm also really interested in this kind of after the fact where, you know, you had this whole organic process, really, really kind of amazing how this whole process went. I mean, it sounds like you know, it was kind of grueling, but the whole Cineco process seemed to really prepare you then for, you know, completing the film and then being able to really get out there and have that kind of grassroots support and know what to do with the film once it was finished.
Yeah, I think Cineco is a really great boot camp in that respect. I mean, they really are all about not just, you know, a movie can't exist in a vacuum. And especially with my experience with 13 Eerie, I mean, the movie came out and it didn't really, you know, I don't think it really found its audience. I think it's for a certain kind of fan base. And it is, and you know, it's not unlike Wolf Cop in the fact that it's got a retro vibe, kind of throwbacky, really gory, you know, but maybe a little more serious. But so I came away from that wanting to really market a film. You know, I didn't ever want to make something that, you know, that's the whole point. That's why you make movies, is to have them seen. So
sure.
Cineco's, yeah. I believe it or not, right? And Cineco's biggest strength, I think, is they are really good at getting the word out about a project. You know, that's their passion. That's within their DNA is, you know, they want to change the face of Canadian cinema. And what I really respond to is, like, as a filmmaker, they're very inclusive. You know, they're not just saying, thanks for making the movie, see you in 3 months. They're saying, thanks for making the movie. Now, based on the universe that you have with your film and that you've created, how can we harness that and get it in people's places, you know? So we sit down and you look at what your movie is and what it's about and who it's for. And, you know, we're a Comic-Con crowd, right? So rather than try and get into a bunch of film festivals that may or may not even be right for Wolf Cop, you know, which is kind of the standard thing you do when you're done a film is, you know, who wants to screen our films? We already knew we were in theaters, so we said, let's go to where our audience is. It's comic conventions, it's things like that. So we went there, you know, grassroots, myself, our producers, Emerson, our effects, talented effects creator, and we would go there, you know, with Leo, our main actor, who is Wolf Cop, and he would actually be, you know, at these places talking to people as Wolf Cop. So I know we're kind of getting ahead of it and skipping the production itself, but this this marketing thing is, I think, in my opinion, for a small film, it's as important as the film itself. You need to, because, again, I don't ever want to make a movie that doesn't have an audience or doesn't find an audience. So that's the beauty of Wolf Cop, I think.
You're right. And you know what's really funny? What absolutely supports everything you just said? You know, I get all kinds of press releases. You know, the word gets out and you get on all these different lists. And the vast majority, you know, 90%+ of the information that I get regarding any kind of release, whether it's film or music or books or whatever the case may be, you know, I'm getting that official PR-based, PR company press release. For Wolf Cop, the very first thing I ever saw about it was a totally grassroots, basically a solicitation to participate in your what amounts to street team. And I thought, wow, yeah, that's really interesting. That's, you know, that's the first time hearing about this. I haven't seen a formal press release on this. And it was by responding to that I then got hooked in, you know, to your formal PR process. So it really did work, because I'm just, you know, I'm out here, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. We got a website, of course, we have this show.
Yeah.
We do lots of social media, you know, so one way or another, I imagine it was through the social media, you know, your street team guys found me. So I thought that was really interesting and showed how successful that approach was. And then I saw, you know, you were showing it. Where were you just showing? You were just showing somewhere very impressive just in the last, I don't know, weeks, month? Where have you shown thus far?
Well, we just actually started our limited theatrical in Canada last week, last Friday. But prior to that, the only real screening we did was for international distribution at the Cannes Film Festival.
So, I mean, you don't get much more impressive than that. I mean, that was a coup, no pun intended, landing that. I mean, I imagine you got that spot because of the grassroots success, you know, that you had created the buzz, because they're quite picky, right?
I mean, I'm not 100% sure, truthfully. I know that the market is, I mean, it wasn't a big red carpet thing or anything. It's more Raven Banner, who is our international distributor, was there trying to see if anybody wanted it in places beyond Canada. But, I mean, once they were in there, it sounds like it went really well. And they went ahead and they put part two in action before part one was even out. So you've got to believe that means there was some strong interest.
I know, that is so funny. I couldn't believe when I saw that. Wow, they're already working on the sequel. So, I mean, that is the ultimate. Talk about kind of a synecdoche. That's my new favorite word. I've been using that lately. A miniaturization, a boiling down, a pulling out the structure of the kind of ideal approach by the major studios. That's what they want, man. They want to be able to be working on that sequel, you know, right when the first one's coming out, and that's what you guys are doing. And by the way, we should mention any and all, you know, information about all these things we're talking about, obviously the film itself and the, you know, all kinds of multimedia. There's a really, really great website. I enjoy your website. It looks good. It works well. I think it's very effective, and that is rather evidently, my friends, it is just wolfcop.com, and you can check out Lowell's personal site or your company site, and that is Lolo, L-O-L-O, film.com, and that is well worth checking out as well. You've actually done quite a few things. You've done TV, you've done documentaries, as we've been talking about the 13 Erie. How old are you? I'm just curious. You seem young.
I'm 35 years young.
Well, 35 is young to be in your position. That is for sure. That means you've made real good use of the last 10, 15 years to be in that position. What year did 13 Erie come out? Is that 2-3 years ago?
Yeah, it was, I believe, 2 years ago. I think it actually just came out last year, 2013, but we shot it in 2011.
Yeah, and what a lesson for you to be able to learn. You know, people, there's lots of talented people out there, and there's lots of talented, ambitious people out there. And, you know, you kind of build this pyramid where it gets narrower and narrower. But, you know, you got to be ambitious. You have to be talented. You have to be determined, that is for sure, and you have to learn from your mistakes. And it sounds like you really took that to heart, that here you worked so hard and you even had a nice budget, you know, for 13 Erie, but due to the marketing side, it just wasn't able to find its audience. So, I mean, you really, that was your takeaway from that experience, and my goodness, obviously, you have rectified that. extremely well. Hey, let's get back again. We're jumping around, but that's the way my diseased brain works. I'd be really curious just to hear a little bit more about just the filmmaking process. How long were you actually shooting it, and how do you do things that you think are a little different maybe from what other people do, or what are your priorities, you know, when you're putting all this together, and especially because you were the writer and director. So, I mean, this really is your film.
Yeah, I mean, that was another big jump for me. And it, in a way, it feels like my first film because it was, I had written it and it was my baby. And I really worried that it would be a lot harder when we were actually shooting because I would be very precious about, you know, the words and how things happened. But in a weird way, I actually think being a writer-director is a really great strength because if you're able to, work with the actors and play with them and adapt and work with the locations and as things change and, you know, things like you have 45 minutes to shoot this three-page scene, things like that, I actually found for me it made me less precious with the material because, I knew it inside out because I'd been, writing and rewriting, and also just because you just feel so comfortable with it. But our shoot was relentless. It was a 17-day shoot, which is very fast. I know. It was not enough time, but I like to say what we lacked in time and money, we more than made up with in passion. We had a really strong Saskatchewan film crew behind us, and it was a marathon, you know? We didn't have time to just relax ever, and we were shooting around 6 pages a day, which anybody who is familiar with film sets or film shoots, I mean, probably a big Hollywood movie does 2 to 4 pages a day, and to do 6 is basically, you're asking for trouble. So we were relentless, and we were 6 with effects and explosions and things like that, so, and fight scenes. So we had to be on the ball, and the key was preparation. You know, we were meticulous. We prepared everything we could. I storyboarded about half the film. And, stuff went wrong, and that's how it rolls. But we just had to adapt and move. And the key for us was, like I said, to move fast, to be prepared, to fluctuate as, crises were thrown our way. And for me, to shoot with 2 cameras. So we had 2 cameras going at all time. Our kind of A camera captured the main action, and our B would either be getting like a close-up or some kind of crazy angle just to give us something to cut to, right? And the advantage of shooting on Red Epic cameras, which we did, was they have a lot of give. So, for example, if we were really tight for time, since we're shooting in 4K, which is like a crazy resolution, it's like well beyond high definition. So if we were ever in a trap or we were running really tight, rather than get a bunch of close-ups, I'd shoot a little wider because I knew that I could then digitally punch in a little bit and steal my close-ups after the fact, which was a godsend on this shoot because, like I said, there was many times when there'd be a scene we needed 4 hours for, and we'd literally look at the clock and say, okay, we've got 1 hour to do all of this.
I love that director talk. That is so cool. Have you been exposed? Have you been involved at all with, quote-unquote, major motion pictures? I mean, have you seen how the studio films or shot, or have you, you know, strictly gone through the film school process and done all you've done in Canada? Not that Canada doesn't make major movies, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, I've been on some bigger sets. I think, like, I spent a day on the set of one of the last Resident Evil films, which is, you know, I don't know what the budget of that was, but it must be pretty big. But by and large, my experience is the film school, the do-it-yourself, my independent short films, you know, you can't, there's no better school than making your own short film and making one, like, you know, once a year. You'll cut out, like, half the mistakes you probably make on your first film if you do short films. And, you know, little things like that. I've been on primarily films in the budget range of 1 to 5.
Interesting. I guess, you know, it's a combination of just inherent talent, observational ability, memory, you know, picking up, I want to do it that way. Oops, I sure don't want to do it that way, as you go. And again, I kind of have this vision of this pyramid that gets narrower and narrower, you know, up at the top, and only the people who can kind of piece it all together, all the various aspects, get to keep doing it. It's pretty Darwinian, I guess. So I'm sure have you had a chance to just take a moment and really feel some satisfaction about this? Because clearly it's a major success on multiple levels.
You know, just briefly, if I'm being honest, I mean, it's been so relentless going from writing to prep to Cineco to production to post-production to promotion that I'd say the first time I actually kind of took a deep breath and enjoyed it and had almost a bit of postpartum was over the weekend when I actually snuck into a theater. And not snuck in. I paid, but I went to see Wolf Cop with an audience of people who hadn't worked on the film. So that was kind of the first moment where I was like, actually, I felt separated from the project and I could just watch it and kind of, in a way, almost enjoy it. It was kind of fun.
How did you feel going in? Were you did you have trepidation? Were you
oh, yeah.
worried of a...
Of course, I'm nervous. I mean, you
obviously.
Never know if people will show up, and they did. It was a good turnout, and, you know, it's hard, though. You'll never be able to separate yourself from that movie, so... you know, if they don't laugh at a joke, I'm confused. What's wrong? You know, and then if they laugh at something,
how
I didn't
dare you?
Was that funny? Yeah, well, then they're laughing at things that I didn't even mean to be a joke. So I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. But it's great because I've seen it enough times. Yeah. No, I've seen it enough times now that it's kind of cool to know where some of the bigger laughs are, and you can almost ride the movie like a wave of, you know, I know when they're going to laugh and when they're going to scream and. There's a certain joy in that, getting to actually see that with an audience, which is what I'm most grateful, I think, from this experience.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. You hear that over and over, both from filmmakers and actors, that it is a completely different experience to go, you know, whether you're incognito or not, but I imagine it's harder for major actors, but you know, for filmmakers, most are still probably relatively anonymous, and to be able to go in there and just sit with your fellow human beings and see how they respond to your project, and it's also interesting to say it's really kind of the first time that you can at least a little bit, you know, divorce yourself from it, from the creative process anyway. And see it as a whole, you know, that I'm sure that was really quite satisfying. Although you sound like you're probably something to be as successful as you have been at such a relatively young age. You're probably something of a perfectionist. I imagine you were also spotting things that you would like to change.
you've already pegged me. Yeah, of course. I was definitely watching, and you know, you always just make a little mental list. But yeah, you have to. You have to let most things go at a certain point. I mean, you know, it's the nature of the beast. You know, that's why I think people keep making movies. You know, I think I have a theory that a lot of people just keep remaking the same movie until they get it right.
Well, my God, look at Woody Allen.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, not that he's only made the same movie, but he's made, you know, he's got his his archetypes, you know, of,
yeah,
of a handful, and he just keeps remaking them over and over and over and
over. Yeah,
well,
I think of, like, Christopher Nolan, who I love, and Christopher Nolan is, like, one of the most talented, brilliant filmmakers, but when you actually stop and look at his films, it's kind of fascinating how similar they all are, not just in tone, but in storyline and character and the protagonist and what their hang-ups are and what their quest is. It's actually fascinating how similar they all are.
What is your quest? Who are some of your favorites? What are your favorite either films or filmmakers or even genres?
I think my favorite filmmakers, working, living filmmakers right now, probably Christopher Nolan and David Fincher. And for me, filmmakers that I feel most connected to or inspired by are Peter Jackson and Sam Raimi and John Landis, people like that.
Right, right. So there's pretty kind of a strong horror fantasy slash fantasy element to them. Is that what you are, a storyteller? Do you like the fantastical element?
I do, I do. I think I'd be hard pressed to do something set in the real world, frankly. I mean, I'm always kind of daydreaming, and I grew up with like comic books and horror movies, and to me, my dream is to do those kinds of fantastical films. And I mean, maybe one day I do like just a straight up drama, but right now it's like, why would I do a movie about two people having a conversation in a courtroom when I could have a werewolf run in with a gun, you know?
Besides, there's other people who really like to do films like that.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah,
the minimalists, the drawing room dramas or comedies. Yeah, well, I probably think more like you do. I'm inclined toward those more colorful and broader canvases, and I can see kind of both sides of the argument on Peter Jackson in terms of, you know, what has he done with his success? You know, you still hear a lot of people who say, oh yeah, you know, his best movie was in, I don't know what, you know, 1989 or something. I don't even remember what it would have been. But, you know, those three, and I'm a little iffy. I'm not completely sold on The Hobbit yet. I guess we'll see how the third one is. But, the three Lord of the Rings, I mean, they're magic. They really are. I was so worried, you know, before I saw that first one, because as, you know, so many tens of millions, hundreds of millions of people are, you know, I so loved the books, and I read them over and over, and I remember at a really young age, even younger probably than a lot of people are exposed to them, you know, I remember my dad reading it to me. I think he read The Hobbit to us, and then I read Lord of the Rings on my own. But I was, you know, quite young when I was hearing the story, so it's so ingrained, and of course it's such a mythic tale anyway, because it's, you know, he unequivocally borrows from you know, the great,
yeah,
myths, you know, of humanity. So, but anyway, you know, I was so concerned going in to that first one. You know, what's he going to do with it? And yeah, I think it's the best one by far. I mean, we still watch it. I don't know if we watch the three every year now, but we sure did, you know, around Christmas when we had a break, you know, we'd all sit there and watch all, and of course it's got to be the extended version, you know, we'd watch all three, you know, either three nights in a row or sometimes we even, I think one time we did do a marathon and put them all together, and I really do love them all, but, you know, that first one is just almost perfect. You know, I can just watch it over and over, and the flow, it has such a draw and a pull and a logic to it. And, I mean, it's just, I was so relieved. It's like, yes, he took it seriously, you know, took it as if it were literal, but not too much so, you know, because you can go too far the other way, too. So, but, yeah, I mean, it's amazing, and I think people were really relieved after there was all that kind of, you know, infighting and whatnot going on through the mid-00s, and really relieved that he was going to take on The Hobbit. I'm not sure if doing it, stretching it out to three films artistically was the right move. Obviously, it'll be a great move financially, but
it's excessive. I totally think it's excessive, and I mean, I love him as a filmmaker, but I didn't need three Hobbits, frankly. I would have stood for one amazing 3-hour one. But again, I love watching his filmmaking. So even when I'm bored, it's so big and grandiose that it's like, well, this is worth $15, you know, or whatever it is now. I'll put on my 3D glasses and spend a few hours in this world.
And the acting is generally very good. And I mean, he just what you said. Even when things don't feel quite right, or you kind of find your mind wandering, he has yet again, you know, you cannot take it away from him. He has yet again very successfully created a world, you know, and that is not easy. I'm sure I don't have to tell you. In some ways, it's maybe the hardest thing, because it's all the little things. How do they come together? You know, you can do almost everything right and still not quite get that overall sense that this is a convincing world. And conversely, if you do create that world, people are willing to forgive an awful lot.
Totally.
All right. Fascinating, fascinating stuff. Moving forward, are you actually writing? Have you been writing the sequel? I mean, are you on it, or is it still just kind of a concept?
I am writing it. I have an outline, and I've got the story arc, and I know where the characters are going, and I've just started putting a metaphorical pen to paper and writing about 10 pages into the actual script.
Well, that's not super far, but it's not nothing either.
Yeah. Well, it's
how long?
The roadmap, it's not so bad.
Exactly. Exactly. You kind of done the hard stuff, I think, ultimately. Well, it depends on how you write, too, of course. But how many? Just by comparison, how many pages was Wolf Cop? Is that
Wolf Cop is about the first one was about, I think, 90 pages. The first draft, I think maybe like the shooting script might have been about 85 or so. So, it's going to be the same ballpark. So, I mean, to say I have 10 pages of the script is one thing, but the final film, which is 90 pages, I guarantee you these 10 pages will be mutated or cut or chopped in a way that
it'll be long gone.
One or two of these pages might actually be in the final film.
Well, that's not bad at all then. I mean, you're 10% plus. 15% into it, and like you say, you know, it'll all change and mutate, but that's all part of the process. I've talked about it. In fact, I talked about it recently, maybe as recently as the show 2 or maybe 3 weeks ago. When a process like this, I really visualize for me this recurring metaphor is the La Brea Tar Pits. Have you heard of that? They're in L.A. They're in Los Angeles. And they were found kind of accidentally in white people. Found much earlier by Native Americans, but just kind of found accidentally, and they saw these bubbles coming up in this tarry, icky substance, you know, and ew, what's this stuff? And one way or another, I don't know if it bubbled up or you know. But they found a fossil, you know. So then they started digging, and it was such a low-tech process. All they would do is lay down a big plank over this tar, and it would sink, but it would sink slowly enough that they could get some work done, and then you just put another plank on top of that. And that's kind of the creative process that I think of, you know, like you were talking about. It doesn't really matter if those initial planks end up, you know, buried.
Yeah.
You had to have done them in the first place just to get the process started. And once that process is going, then the momentum kind of takes over. At least you hope it will.
Yeah, and I'm hoping. I've never written a part two before, so I'm hoping, maybe naively, that it's a little easier. I mean, now that I know these characters, I mean, there's new characters to be sure, but now that I kind of know my two or three main characters, it's nice to feel, you know, like I know their skin and I've seen how they exist, and I know where they need to go to be out of their comfort zone, so it's kind of fun in that respect.
Interesting. And, of course, there's pitfalls, too, to doing a sequel, of course. You know, you don't want to repeat yourself. It actually can be very difficult. You obviously have to use that same world. It's got to make sense.
Yeah.
It has to tie into it, and you're using, you know, some or all of the main characters, but you do want to take them somewhere different, obviously.
Yeah, I could be. It could be harder. I don't know. I guess I'll let you know when I'm further along. But I think it's dangerous. I think sequels are dangerous, and I don't want to make the mistake that I think in my head when I watch every sequel. You know, I'm like, you know, I've seen so many bad sequels. It's like there's more than good. So you want to make sure you sequelize the right thing. You know,
it is hard. You know, I read all these lists. I get something like 80 different Google search terms, and I get alerts on them every day because I'm trying to cover in the broadest possible sense the paranormal, both in the quote unquote real world and then in the media. So I'm interested in movies, TV, books, comics, all of it, you know, and then what's going on in the real world too in terms of the paranormal, whether it be ghosts or cryptozoology or UFOs and on and on and on. So I get all this stuff and all this input, and a lot of them are lists. You know, that's kind of a big thing on the internet. It's kind of the safe bet. Make a list,
yeah.
Right? So, you know, I see a lot of lists of sequels or even series, you know, and you see kind of the same ones get mentioned. There aren't that many that are really good, and there's very few that are better than the first one. There's a handful, you know, but there's a lot of people who like the second Godfather better than the first.
Me too. I do.
You know, there are those who you know, will certainly argue the Star Wars movies in terms of, you know, what's the best. A lot of people think the very first one is, at least of the original three, was
the
least
more complete
good
story. I think the first one's the more complete story, but actually it's funny you bring up Star Wars because my goal with Wolf Cop 2 is to make it the Empire Strikes Back of Wolf Cop movies.
I have drawn you out. Hey, now, so far all of this release information is regarding Canada. When are we going to get a U.S. release? Any info on that? Any movement in that direction?
I would love to know. We'll shout it from the rooftops as soon as we know. I know there's interest in the States, and I know that Cineku is in discussions with people, and I'm hoping we can announce something in the next 2 weeks because I really believe a big part of our fan base is in the States, and it's kind of funny in a way and cool that a movie goes out in Canada first and the States has to wait for it, which never happens. But I want to bring it to the States. So even if it's like a limited 10 theater release or something, I'm dying to go and share the love.
Sure, and then of course besides the theaters, which certainly, as a filmmaker, there's nothing that replaces that experience, you know, really being in a physical theater. But then, of course, you'll have VOD and you'll have DVD and Blu-ray. Oh, that's the other thing. Any word on DVD, Blu-ray?
Oh, we're definitely doing them. I think I last heard somewhere in the early fall, maybe around September, and definitely I want to get a kick-ass making of on there, like a nice, I don't know if it'll be feature length or an hour or something, but we had an EPK documentarian, a guy named Tim, follow the whole production from Cineku right through to the production, even now through like promoting the film. So we have the makings of a really solid behind-the-scenes doc of what I think is a pretty interesting filmmaking experience, you know, from we got nothing, and we have this idea in our basement, to we're actually screening it.
It's a great story. It is absolutely – I mean, that was why I wanted to talk to you, because it is such a good story. It's a really – it's different. It's kind of an extension of these various threads that have been in place for a while now. but it's taking them another step. And it brings together the internet. It shows that reach, the international, like you were saying. I read, I think, on the excuse me, one second. I was coaching baseball all day. So I was yelling a lot and swallowed a lot of dust. A lot
That's
of dust.
Good.
No, it gets old. And my system cannot take it like I used to.
I think
delicate flower. Yeah. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was just saying, yeah, I do think it's an interesting story, and I think, we have the footage to show it. And, when I'm in film school, or even now, one of my best things I love about films and filmmaking is special features. It's kind of a rare lost art form now that Blu-rays aren't so popular, but, bringing up The Lord of the Rings or Star Wars or any of those things.
Oh,
I
yeah,
love
amazing.
Nothing more than a great, 2-hour making of that shows all work and all what it took to make a film, you know?
Oh, man. Yeah, that really is the gold standard, I think, still maybe is, there's so many great collections out there, but that, the package with all three extended versions on Blu-ray of those movies, and then those hours and hours and hours and hours.
Hours and hours. And they explain it in anybody's terms, you know? Like, that's my comfort food when I'm sick. I'll fall asleep watching, 6 hours of, how they did a certain effect or fight scene. Because, it's not just, 15 minutes on the whole movie. They will give you an hour on a certain fight scene or a certain, the costumes, a half an hour making of. It's phenomenal.
Well, part of what it has done, and I agree with you, I'm very sad that we're already, it was actually quite a brief window that we had, everyone who was interested was forced to buy first DVD and then Blu-ray, with very brief HD DVD in between.
Yeah,
I love
yeah.
those. I still collect those. You can get them for a dollar, I think I have pretty much every one I would ever want at this point, though, of the HD DVDs. But
probably not going to be too many more coming your way.
No, not too many more. No. I every once in a while I'll still find one that, sure, I'll buy that for a dollar. Why not? But that's a whole other discussion.
It's a lot
there,
technical
merits, but yeah, these behind the scenes and the making ofs, I love those. And what I was going to say is one of the results of that. I don't know that it was necessarily anyone's intention, but those who are interested, and it's kind of a surprisingly large number of fans out there, have learned so much more about the process and come to appreciate the process. Just for myself, I've always loved, for some odd reason, I've always loved the credits, and I love to just sit there and watch them or read them if we're talking about music, sit there and read the one thing, hear everyone always say about they miss about albums, the vinyl is
the reading the liner notes. Yeah.
The liner notes, and you get them on CD, but they're so tiny and it's just not the same thing. Anyway, I think we have really come to have an understanding, a much better understanding of what all these different roles are that are performed, all those odd sounding titles of people's jobs in movie making and TV making too. And, we've come to understand, I think, a lot better what's all involved and how it really is this group project. And sure, someone has to be in charge and I love the whole auteur process and mentality, but it is collaborative and there's all these roles and really important functions and that make it possible, that enable it. And I think we've learned a lot through those special features, and that's already going away again because now people are shifting over to digital, on demand and so on and so forth. And hopefully those additional things will kind of stick with the actual product, but I guess that remains to be seen. I'm not sure if we're going to get quite the loving care that have gone into some of these really amazing. I mean, I have a large number of, I love having those completest collections, whether they be TV series. And, how often do you really sit down and watch them all the way through? We have some. But my kids have decided, they love Get Smart, man. We watched every freaking Get Smart episode. They love Bewitched. We watched every Bewitched episode. Shows that were on for years. And, again, the part of the fun is the behind-the-scenes stuff and getting a sense that you almost get a sense that you're part of that process, and that is part of the fun. All right, last question. We have burned through an hour. I've really enjoyed talking with you. Lots and lots of fun. I've learned a lot. I easy to hear your love of filmmaking and the process and your creativity. So, assuming you continue on, your trajectory continues on and up, and I certainly have no reason to think it won't. What is that ideal back of your mind, no expense spared project that you would like to do?
I've got some ideas of my own. I have big projects that in the back of corners of my mind I dream about, having the money to do my own epic, something fantasy in the realm of like a quality of a Star Wars. I think most filmmakers of my generation probably have something like that, but I've got my own ideas, and I'd also love to play in things like the Marvel Playground or something.
Sure, of course. What we've seen so many of those now. Who do you think? What character is underrepresented thus far? What's one of your favorites? Comic favorites who hasn't really had the treatment yet?
Well, I'm a big fan of the main characters. So, I think no one has gotten Hulk really right yet. I mean, I think they've gotten close.
I agree.
But I'm very so happy now with Mark Ruffalo playing the Hulk. And he was great in the Avengers, but it's just like, okay, now you've got him. Give him his own movies, So I'd like to see more Hulk. But, I just love – I think they are – the gold standard for fantasy, fictional, comic-style filmmaking. I don't know what DC is doing, but Marvel's killing it.
Yeah, they sure are. They sure are. We've seen amazing things. Well, all the main characters have been done well at least once or twice,
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, certainly we've had success. And I'm talking about artistically, not just financially. Batman has been done well. Superman has been wildly variable, but, not all bad. And certainly the Raimi Spider-Man movies, certainly the first two anyway. And speaking of
– they're better than the new ones by far, yeah.
Speaking of sequels, there's a lot of people who like that second one better than the first one.
Which, the Raimi one?
Yeah.
Oh, I agree. I think second Spider-Man's far better.
Very dramatic. I mean, it really is. You care. You really care about those characters. And he got the bad guys right, too, All right. Let's reiterate here. We are talking to Lowell Dean. He is the writer-director of indie horror comedy sensation, my friends, Wolf Cop, which is opening next week all the way across Canada, and it is a Canadian-made film. It will be coming, I am certain, to the U.S., and we've really been talking about this kind of amazing grassroots success story behind it, both in the making of the film and then now in its marketing. And so go check it out. You can get lots of good audio, visual, multimedia info on the Wolf Cop site, and that is wolfcop.com. Lowell's own site is lolofilm.com, and they are quite active in the social media as well. Why don't you give the rest of the information so I don't have to go look it up, and just tell people how they can track you down.
Sure. I mean, I think we're quite easy. I would just say go to wolfcop.com because we are obsessed with social media. We have a killer social media team, and Wolfcop is everywhere. You know, that'll be your hub, wolfcop.com, to get you to our Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and, you know, whatever's coming up next. And we engage people. So you want to talk about Wolfcop, you like Wolfcop, you want to pick a fight with Wolfcop, we're here for you.
Yes, indeed you are, because as I was saying, that was really how I first heard about the project at all. So the proof is in the pudding. Well, again, congratulations, Lowell, on the success thus far. I'm following along very closely and see how things end up, but obviously you're off to a fantastic start. I certainly enjoyed the movie. It's fun. It has a self-aware tone, but not too much so. It's not jokey. So I don't think it crosses that line. You know, there's always that danger with the horror comedy. You know, that is not an easy thing to get right, but I think you did.
Thanks. Yeah, no, it's quite a tightrope. We were very aware as we were making it.
All right. Well, I hope to talk to you again soon, talking about two and subsequent projects down the line. Thanks so much, Lowell, and good luck with the widespread across the Great Plains, the second largest nation in the world geographically, Canada, next week. Good luck with that. I hope it goes really great for you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your time and spreading the word of Wolfcop.
Our pleasure. Thanks, Lowell. All right, everyone, and be sure to check out America's Most Haunted. Of course, our website, America's-most-haunted.com. Of course, at AM Haunted on Twitter, now up to, he brags, 271,000 followers. Yeah, rocking. And we are working the Facebook hard. We're picking up steam there. For whatever reason, it was easier for me to figure out Twitter. I don't know. It's just, you know, some media you have an affinity for, and Twitter just seemed to make sense to me, and I'm still kind of trying to figure out Facebook, but Teresa's been working it hard. We're actually bringing in some interns who have social media experience themselves, and we are gonna make that Facebook catch up to that Twitter, and we're gonna be adding some new ones too. We're gonna do Pinterest, we're gonna do Tumblr. It's amazing. And to top it all off, my friends, of course, the book, the America's Most Haunted book. We are getting closer now. Guess what I just saw? What just came in yesterday? The final proof in the format that the book will be in. So that is exciting indeed, and the book will be out the end of September, but we're already working on all the pre-promo for that and getting things lined up. So that's only a few months off. It's very exciting. All right, so thanks for listening. We'll be back again, of course, next Tuesday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, and we will be interacting with you all through the good old internet in the meantime. I'm Eric Olson. Thanks so much. Have a great evening.